On the day that I'm reading this, it's August 15th, Nipsey Hussle's birthday. His murder was probably the last time I shed real tears for a person I didn't know, since Michael Jackson. Nipsey's story is one of legend. To make it out the streets, become a successful entrepreneur, rap artist, and give back to the community while preaching leadership, ownership, independence, and knowing your self-worth. He married a model, dropped the classic album, and had the entire world in his hands, only to be brought down by a jealous man in his own neighborhood. There have been plenty more deaths in my family since Uncle Bobby. It's my Aunt Willa Mae, Miss Evelyn, Uncle Jim, Uncle Jimmy. Yes, there was a Jim and a Jimmy in my family. But anyway, as I get older, I think about my own mortality a lot more than ever. I remember those times when I was a thrill-seeking young troublemaker, running headfirst into danger just because it was fun. I've almost been shot, stabbed, beat up, been in cars with people drinking and driving, and we just laugh it off later because we survived it. Sometimes you can cry over the death of a person you never knew. And if the story is so tragic, or if that person's life or art touched you, and that was definitely Michael Jackson for me. During a 2009 terrible tour, I stopped at a Burger King in Nashville before a show scheduled for that evening. I noticed everybody was crowded around the TV, which was set to CNN. They followed a story that was reporting that Michael Jackson, the king of pop, had died. No one wanted to believe it, so everyone was searching hard to confirm or deny the report. Twitter was on fire. It turned out to be true. TMZ broke it. Michael Jackson was dead at 50 years old. I was stunned and paralyzed with grief, but I still had a performance that night. It's probably the most depressing show of my entire life. I blocked the memory out of my head because I still had to drive 800 miles to Philadelphia for my next show by myself. Went to a record store, I bought a copy of Michael Jackson's Greatest Hits, and I spent most of that drive playing Man in the Mirror on repeat and crying. On the drive, I thought about my most memorable music moments, and they all involved MJ. A 7-year-old me staying up late to watch the Grammys in 84 after MJ had won 8 awards, and me hoping he would get his 9th, even as the credits were rolling. I was like, Mom, you never know. He might get one more. Can I stay up? Begging my mom for a beaded jacket, then later for a Thriller jacket. Buying the last copy of Thriller on vinyl from my local store right before they sold out. Attempting to emulate the moonwalk for a week straight after Motown 25 aired. It literally felt like I lost a family member. Michael Jackson's impact on music and culture were phenomenal. Hard to imagine, but at the height of his popularity, the president of CBS Records had to threaten to pull all other artists' music just to get Michael Jackson's Billie Jean into rotation on MTV. MJ broke down barriers and transitioned from another face in the R&B crowd to the unquestionable king of pop. Later in 2009, after Mike's death, his final concert rehearsals were packaged in a film called This Is It, and it remains the only movie I've ever walked out of without finishing. I just couldn't stand to watch Michael in the condition he was in, barely himself, giving his last to do what he does best, performing for us. And I'm a stickler about not wanting to see things the artist didn't really want to show us. So after my death, please don't release songs or books that I didn't want out, okay? Thanks. At this very same time, Phoenix, Arizona's hip-hop scene was about to experience one of its highest highs, followed by its lowest low. Willie North Pole of South Phoenix, a signee of rapper Ludacris, was releasing his highly anticipated release, The Connect, that week. In the build-up leading to this album, Willie had appeared on national TV in Phoenix garb, shot videos in the neighborhood, made several local appearances at shows, and had campaigned hard to get the city behind a very strong movement. This was supposed to be the moment that Phoenix hip-hop reached the mainstream. Powered by a strong single and Ludacris's cosign, nobody doubted that Willie North Pole was about to become a star. All he needed were the numbers to cement his place in history. Here's the problem. It released on the same day that Michael Jackson died. While the album sold out in every record store in Phoenix, The Connect was drastically undershipped everywhere else. I was in Dallas on release day, and my boy Mr. Miranda and I attempted to purchase this record, and the Best Buy employee had no recollection of this album even coming into the store. Added to that, same week as Michael Jackson's death.
Shoot.
Farrah Fawcett died the same day, and nobody even talked about that. So a rapper from Phoenix didn't have a chance. All of MJ's albums shot back onto the charts, while The Connect underperformed, failing to crack Billboard's top 200. Phoenix collective hopes and dreams went out the window. It was a blow that Phoenix never recovered from. I mean, we've still never had a mainstream look or a hit hip-hop star since, though people have had great successes. Shout out to Futuristic and Trap House. Earlier this year, Tyke Trap House Patterson, a pillar in our hip-hop community here in AZ, passed just a month after revealing to everybody that he had stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Trap spent his last year co-writing songs for Isaiah Acosta, a teen who was born without a jaw and was unable to speak, but had dreams of becoming a successful rapper. Trap became his voice, and the story went viral. It took Isaiah and him all around the country on a huge run. I sat with Trap in the hospital just a week before he passed, and I asked him about future music and if he was going to release his own album again. And he told me he had a bigger mission. He said he spent so much time on Isaiah because he wanted him to live his dream, and he knew that that was bigger than his own aspirations. He had worked on new music, but he said it was really negative and combative. And since he started thinking about his own mortality, being in the hospital, he didn't want to put out any more negative energy. He said it was a lot of chest dumping, which we as MCs kind of have to do once in a while when things aren't going our way, or when you feel like you need to make a statement because you're being slept on. Even me, probably the nicest guy you know, I do it too. At least once an album, or maybe once a project, I feel like we have to do a little King Konging just to let people know the deal. Trap left the legacy of literally being the collective conscious of Arizona hip hop. He'd been there since the early 2000s, in the streets, at the rallies, at the concerts, and on the front line. A true warrior. His passing this year left a huge hole in the scene that hasn't and probably won't be filled. Social media is truly the gift and the curse, man. I love it, I need it, but I hate it sometimes. A pleasant post about a memory or a picture of your loved one popping up can bring good feelings, but man, it can also bring back a lot of sadness. Reminds me of Dr. Seuss's quote, though. Don't be sad that it's over. Be happy it happened. And I was happy to know a man that they call Dave New York. Just this past week, a man that so many people I know loved, Dave Tobman, aka Dave New York, he passed after what seemed like a really quick bout with kidney failure. Dave was literally the most interesting man in the world. No BS. He was the road manager for the late great J Dilla, Talib Kweli, The Roots, Dilated Peoples, so many people. He was the plug of all plugs. I can't even put it any better than what Black Thought did on his Instagram posts. So I'm going to read that. Thought says, I lost my brother today. Dave New York Tobman, the realest rider. He was my damn near day one. The best kind of dude who I could never even come close to repaying for all he's done for me. The one who puts donuts on Dilla's grave for me twice a year. The one who's always there for me and my family. The only person I've ever rented a car through in Cali. The first one at UCLA when my daughter was born. The first and the most selfless man I've ever known. A huge connecting force in hip hop. And it all began in 1993 or 4 when Amir and I walked into Enterprise with no license and no credit card. If you never cross paths with Dave Tobman, your hip ain't hop enough. He's the penultimate plug. My brother, rest in power. You fought so hard. Dave told me the best story about the notorious B.I.G. Yes, that B.I.G. gave him his name. I loved it so much that I had him tell it on my voicemail for my Biggie tribute tape. That's out there. Dave was the embodiment of Dusty Rhodes' Hard Times promo. He's dined on pork and beans, and he's dined in the finest establishments with kings and queens. And he remained humble and was the same around everyone, superstars to regular folks. Rest in peace, Dave, and Trap, and Ronnie, Uncle Bobby, and MJ. And if you have suffered a loss of someone close to you, please make sure you take the time that you need to heal. When a death takes place, you might experience a wide range of emotions, even when the death is expected. Many people report feeling an initial stage of numbness after first learning about a death. But there's no real order to the grieving process. So you may have heard of some of those steps like denial, disbelief, confusion, shock, sadness, anger, guilt. These feelings are normal and common reactions to loss. You might not be prepared for the intensity and duration of your emotions or how swiftly your moods may change. You may even begin to doubt the stability of your mental health. But be assured that these feelings are healthy and appropriate and will help you to come to terms with your loss. Remember, it takes time to fully absorb the impact of a major loss. You never stop missing your loved one, but the pain eases after time and allows you to eventually go on with your life. Peace and blessings. I'm Mega Rand. This is Random Encounters.